Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at home maintenance and home improvement, and we're going to zero in a bit for you today on solar and using solar power in your home or maybe in your business as well. A couple of guests for you today. Chad Spate back once again of Chad's Design Build. Burke O'Neill, our other guest, and he's from Full Spectrum Solar, and they'll talk about solar technology, what's available for you and for me, and how do you use it, how has it benefited, or how might it benefit. And I hope you'll join in with the conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page with your questions, comments, there as well, or even photos if you've got a photo that you need to have on there. And Chad Spate, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
And Burke O'Neill, welcome. First time visitor. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
It's great to have you here. Chad, how often do you use solar power in your building and renovation work?
That's a great question, Larry. We've had about a half dozen clients over the years put in a solar system in conjunction with the work. And I would say that's mostly been in the last 10 years. So, you know, it's not happening all the time. And maybe half of the time it doesn't happen while we're there doing whatever work we do. But then I'll go by the house a few years later and see that they went ahead and put that solar system on. So, you know, It's like everything else. You know, you build out the dream of everything you'd like to do, and then sometimes you have to phase it. But there's so many great incentives, as we'll talk about today, and just so many great benefits to putting solar on your home if your house has the right orientation to the sun and exposure to the sun. You know, it's just a great way to go.
Well, you know, and Burke, of course, is involved in all this. Talk about Full Spectrum. Tell us about your company.
Sure. We started in 2002, and it was just my brother and I and a bag full of tools in the back of his old Camry. We did a business plan, and it looked like it might be sort of an iffy proposition in Wisconsin. There weren't as good of incentives. At that time when we started, module prices were almost 10 times what they cost today. So it started out as sort of a part-time hobby-type job, and surprisingly, year after year, module prices dropped, racking technology improved, inverters got more efficient. Those are what convert the direct current from the panels to alternating current, and the business really took off. We're up to 4 to 5 trucks going out every day, 15 employees, and it's just been really amazing.
It is amazing. You know, I saw some figures on what the future holds for solar. There was some worldwide research done, and some years back they were predicting that by 2050 about 11% there'd be about 11% saturation. Right now they're predicting 30 to 50% saturation in solar. So obviously it's become very popular, and as you say, the costs have really dropped on panels, for example.
Yep, that's true. I think it's a very good investment if you have a roof that's mostly shade-free, ideally with a southern or within 45 degrees of south orientation. And right now we have a good focus on energy program. We have a 30% federal tax credit that goes through 2019. There's a number of established contractors in the Madison area that can provide a quality installation and stand behind it with a good warranty.
What are some of the newest renovations in innovations, I should say, in residential solar power?
Well, I think the biggest one, in addition to cost reductions, would be the efficiency of the modules. The actual solar panels that produce electricity, most of what we were installing in 2002 was around 10% efficiency, and now we're commonly installing modules that are 19% efficient, and some of them are up to 21%. And what that means is often there's a limited amount of good south-facing roof area. We can get almost twice as much power in what's you know, available.
Yeah.
And that improves the economics if you're handling half as many modules. There's less labor, there's less racking, and it means we can really make a significant impact on someone's electric bill. It's not uncommon. We can cover 85-90% of their electric on a yearly basis.
Wow. That's quite a number. Ryan in Superior has something that relates to that. Ryan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I have a tracking system installed that has 18 panels. They're 255-watt panels, and they feed into an inverter. It doesn't quite supply as much power as I would have anticipated. It's completely shade-free. Oh, I'll typically get a maximum of about 40 kW at any one time. But, I mean, I'm sorry, 4K.
I was going to say, that'd be a big tracker.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Anyway, my question is actually twofold. One, my inverter is a 3.8K inverter. Is that limiting me? And the inverter also has two inputs. Can I take that second set of inputs and install additional panels on a non-tracking installation?
Good questions. This is Burke. First of all, regarding the inverter limiting your power production, it's probably a very small amount. Usually, if you have a system that's, say, 4 kilowatts, and that's the peak DC rating, what you might see at solar noon, there's going to be some losses, voltage drop, panels become a little bit less efficient as they warm up. So it's probably rare that you're seeing that full 4 kilowatts going to the inverter anyway. And then, of course, you know, there's going to be some dust and cloud cover and whatnot. So what we find is if your inverter is about 20 or 30% smaller than the peak rating of your solar electric system, it only impacts your yearly energy production a couple percent at most. So I probably wouldn't advise, replacing that inverter, because I don't think that's the limiting factor there. Regarding adding an additional array, you certainly could into that other, it's probably a separate maximum power point tracking connection point, you do want to check with the manufacturer of the inverter and make sure that it's rated for whatever additional power you're going to put on it. And also keep in mind, as you approach, say, 50% oversized on the module side to the inverter ratio, you'll start seeing more like 4 or 5% impact on yearly energy production.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. You mentioned maintenance, or you mentioned dust or whatever, and Jerry on Facebook wants to know about routine maintenance. Is it required for solar panels? Do you have to dust them, or what? And what about snowfall?
Mm-hmm. Well, in this climate, we get pretty regular rain, and we find that usually that's plenty to rinse the panels off and restore them back to the production you would see when they're dust-free. What you're looking at is probably 1 or 2% reduction in power when there's significant dust forming on them. So it's probably not worth your time to go rinse them or spray them off or anything. I know on my installation, I don't. I sometimes, if it hasn't rained for a while, see a little reduction in peak power. But then as soon as it rains, we're back up again.
Yeah. And snowfall?
We don't normally recommend clearing the snow off of them, although there are some special brooms that are designed for doing that if you insist. But typically, if you look at your production over a whole year, you're only looking at about 2 or 3% impact on your yearly energy production. So you have to weigh, is it worth getting up on a ladder? And you definitely don't want to climb on an icy roof in the middle of the winter. Safety is the most important thing. So most people don't clear them. If people do, there's some specific products you want to use. Some people just can't stand the thought of missing out on a little power while the snow melts off the panels. And you want to use something that's not going to scratch them or damage any of the glass surface.
Yeah, for sure. Jim in Sun Prairie has a different kind of question. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I are looking at tube skylights to try to brighten up a fairly dim kitchen. We don't know anything about them, really. There's a few manufacturers of them that we don't have any experience with. And quite frankly, we're trying to figure out what kind of a contractor we would call just to get estimates.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Just as an aside, I'll say that I have some relatives who have an interior bathroom with no windows, and they install one, and you never turn the light on during the day when you go in there. But what's your experience with that, Chad?
Well, and with a full moon, too, you're going to be fairly well illuminated.
Sure.
So, sun tunnels are a great way to bring maximum light into an interior room. And, of course, the old-fashioned way was to put a skylight on the roof, and then you have to, you know, build down a shaft, and you have to insulate that shaft, and it's much more complicated and much more expensive. A sun tunnel is really going to maximize the light, which is what you're wanting to get. In the Madison and Milwaukee markets, there is a brand called Solatube, which we're very big proponents of in our remodeling company, and we utilize that product. And the Solatubes are installed by a company called Brighter Concepts. There are other products out there. Velux Skylights, which is my favorite brand of skylight, also makes a sun tunnel. We use Solatube, so I don't get into installing them or promoting them. But in the world of skylights, I think Velux is the best brand. But I would recommend Solatube. I know they do a lot of work with focus on energy, which I'm also a big advocate of here in the state of Wisconsin. And you know, they have installers, they stand behind the work, and they have a lot of options. And there may be some other options out there as well, but that's what I would recommend.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling,
Thank
Jim.
You.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Frank in Fort Atkinson, it's your turn now. Hi, Frank.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to look at numbers. I spend roughly $2,000 a year on electricity. I have a southern exposure roof, probably a good 18, 20 feet long. How much would it cost to for a panel and installation, and how long would it take to get the payback on that?
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit easier for me to work off of kilowatt hour figures, which is another number you can see on your utility bill for how much electricity you're using in a month or a year. But I'm guessing that if you're around $2,000 a year, you're probably using maybe two or 300 kilowatt hours a month. Do you have a bill handy by chance?
Unfortunately, I'm on the road. I don't.
Ah, okay. Well, let's assume.
Yeah, let's assume it's a 300 kilowatt hour per month of electricity use. And it's a good site that has minimal shading facing south. Typical installation, if there's nothing unusual, would probably run around $10,000 before any incentives. And you would receive around a $1,500 reward from Focus on Energy. That's a state-level incentive program for energy efficiency and renewables. And then you'd also, on the balance, be able to take a 30% federal tax credit. So you're probably looking at a net cost somewhere around $6,000, maybe $7,000 if it's a complicated installation. As far as the economics go, we find that most of our customers see positive cash flow in less than 10 years. Some as short as 7 or 8 years if they're able to take advantage of time of use metering. Time of use metering is where the rates are different depending on the time of day. And generally, the rates are highest in the middle of the day when the solar energy system is producing the most power. Because the panels have a 25-year power output warranty, the racking, stainless steel, aluminum, we expect a really long lifespan out of these systems. Even the inverters are available with a 20-year warranty. So over the lifespan of the equipment, you may be looking at a 10% or better return on investment, and that's tax-free. So if you've got a good south-facing roof with minimal shading, it can be a very good investment.
There we go. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Madison, Burke O'Neill, project engineer at Full Spectrum Solar, as we talk home improvement and using solar power. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement and using solar power with Chad Spade and Burke O'Neill. Great to have them along. Thanks for listening. You can join in at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. Mike in Madison up next. Mike, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you, guys. So last year, I live in Madison, and last year I tried to get in on the city had a bulk purchase on solar electric systems. And unfortunately, while I have a very large roof that faces south, apparently I was getting a little too much shade from the trees nearby. So I was disappointed that I couldn't get in on that program. But I'm wondering if there's other options. Like, I was looking at the possibility of solar hot water. Is that an option? Like, you know, I'm looking, I would really love to have some type of a solar panel on my roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's go to Burke O'Neill.
Well, you certainly can install a solar water heating system. We used to install a lot more. We don't install as many any longer because the economics of a solar electric system have gotten so much better that... usually the solar thermal system would take a lot longer to recoup its cost. In fact, it's becoming common that if somebody wants solar water heating, we'll actually recommend that they just add 1 or 2 kilowatts to their photovoltaic system and then a heat pump water heater, and that pencils out a lot better economically than installing a standalone solar water heater. So if you've got a lot of shade, probably solar energy isn't the best option. The first things I'd look at would be, you know, improving the building envelope and air sealing, efficiency measures, and Chad could certainly mention or talk about some of the best options there. But if you really want to do solar, what I would look at is a photovoltaic system where the modules are able to operate independently of each other. So you could either use microinverters, they're called, or optimizers. And what that those technologies do is if one panel is partially shaded, it won't affect any of the others. So if half your array is shaded at certain parts of the day, at least the other ones that are completely free will be producing at full power. And each of those that is partially shaded will still be producing whatever it possibly can. And what we're finding, too, is with module prices having dropped so much in cost, sites that people would have considered uneconomical in the past, they're looking at it again now and they're like, hey, I can handle a 30% impact on shading because I can get a turnkey installation for half as much as what I was looking at, you know, say 7 or 8 years ago.
So would that be what you would use if, let's say, you have full open sun to the south, and mostly to the east and west, but your roof line faces north and south. Understand what I'm...
So you've got the roof surfaces that faced east and west.
If you had roof surfaces that faced east and west, then you'd have a southern exposure on the roof, if I'm my directions right. So here's a roof line that is facing north and south, but the south side is completely open and mostly open on the sides. Can solar work in that situation? Is that kind of what you were talking about?
Sure. Optimizers or microinverters might be a good option if you have panels that are facing both east and west. East and west oriented panels will produce about 20% less energy than do south. But most of the time, we'll just follow the roof line rather than spend the extra cost and have the aesthetic impact of tilting the panels up to the south. It's not going to be a lot more expensive per kilowatt hour of production because you don't have that extra cost of tilting the panels up.
Gotcha.
But definitely there needs to be some consideration if you have panels facing lots of different directions. You need to have an inverter that has multiple inputs, or you need to have optimizers or microinverters on each module, because obviously if they're tied together and there's some east and west, they're going to produce peak power at different times during the day.
Makes sense. Mike, I hope that helps.
Oh, tremendously. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to James in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi. Thank you for calling, James.
Hello. My question, I had a solar system back in the 80s. It was 70 watts, and inverters are expensive, so it was totally DC. And I realize inverters are cheaper now, but I was wondering if it would be advisable, since so much stuff runs on DC nowadays, seems like everything I plug in has a transformer on it, if a dual voltage, 12-volt DC and a 110 AC, would be advisable. It's rough here.
Yeah, okay, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I believe there was a time where, maybe 15 years ago, where it might have made sense to have a both alternating current and direct current. Probably more so for like a cabin or off-grid type installation or an RV. But because inverters have gotten so much more efficient, they're usually 95% more efficient or more. And because there's lots of devices that are most of our appliances are designed to run an alternating current. And even if that alternating current's being turned to direct current, trying to bypass that power cube and run things directly, there's a lot of potential for voltage mismatch and damaging your equipment. So generally, we recommend keeping everything alternating current. If you had like a really small camper or cabin, you might have a couple of 12-volt DC outlets. For example, I have a little camper, but even though it's tiny, I do have both alternating current and direct current. There's just a couple things that I'll plug in on, car type appliances into the 12 volt outlets. But I can't imagine it would make sense to do that for any like a larger RV or a grid connected home. The extra expense, wiring, code issues would make it not worthwhile.
Hmm. There we go. Thanks, James. Let's go to David in Verona. Hi, David.
Hi, Larry. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. I have an original question. I thought of one while I was listening on the phone. The question first was, I have room around my house because I live in a more open rural area. Is it cheaper and easier to put panels on the ground instead of on the roof? And then the second question is, can I take the electricity that I'm producing for my panels and store it in a battery and then use it in case of power outages? Would that be an easy or efficient way to go?
Okay.
Well, installing the panels on a roof is generally the least expensive, at least initially, because you've already got the surface and the racks can just follow the slope of the roof. Often it's the place that there's the least shading as well. However, for other reasons, people sometimes like to have their system installed on the ground away from the roof because they've got a lot of area, because the house has shading from trees in the vicinity and there's an open area. We've done installations on pergolas, poles, or just tilted up on concrete piers. But it does add some cost to the installation. So if you're looking at that option, you might want to compare it to a roof mount. One advantage is if in 20, 25 years you need to replace your roof, you don't have that extra cost of removing and reinstalling the panels. And so some people like the idea of just having the panels there and having the house systems separate from that. Regarding battery backup, it does add quite a bit of cost. Most of the inverters that we're installing are designed to just connect to the utility grid through your electrical panel, and there's no storage at all. So during the day, there may be times where you're producing more electricity than you're using, and then that will actually sort of spin your meter backwards, and you'll be credited, and you can use those credits in the evening or if it's a cloudy day. To add batteries to a grid-connected photovoltaic system usually adds about $5,000 to $10,000. So most people look at a generator first unless they're expecting extended outages or if they really don't like the idea of a generator for backup power.
There we go. Thank you so much for that call. Joanne in Neshkoro, let's go to you. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Larry. I put a geothermal system in when I had to build a new house, and I had the energy tax credit, but my understanding was it ended with 2016 taxes. So is that still available, or is it available to new installations, or what's happened there?
Okay.
Well, it was actually pretty surprising to everybody in the industry, but there was a last-minute extension of the federal tax credits when we were close to seeing them expire. And we're going to have a full 30% investment tax credit through 2019. So there's still a couple more years to take advantage of that really great program.
Oh, that's good news.
All right.
Because I haven't had to pay income tax, so.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Joanne. Appreciate it. Jeff in Sparta has a question. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you folks today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, just recently, this past May, I installed our first photovoltaic system on our roof of our house. 22 panels up there, runs the house completely, and we love it, of course. I have two questions, or one comment. One comment is, earlier you mentioned that not cleaning the panels, and I think that's correct, but if you do, the company that I did bought our panels through said don't use groundwater, you should use treated water, because the mineral in the water can fade and fog the panels, reducing their
effectiveness.
Efficiency.
Yeah.
Yes. The question I have is, I've got batteries on my mind, and right now they're telling me that they're in their second and third generation of batteries. I'm wondering when this technology is going to become both available and affordable. I don't really like the idea of being, even with the solar, you have to have grid power to make the conversion from DC to AC power.
Right.
And I'm wondering when and if the battery technology will get there, and if the expense, may not ever pay for itself, but the peace of mind have being able to be completely grid free is very appealing to me, at least.
Okay. All right.
Well, there's a approach called AC coupling, where after you've already installed a grid-connected solar energy system, you can add an inverter that sort of tricks your primary inverter into thinking it's still connected to the grid. So it can operate with this other inverter that can charge batteries and can run backed up loads. So you'd still have some options in the future with your system. Regarding battery technology, still sealed lead acid is competitive with lithium ion battery technology. The main advantage of lithium ion being that it's lighter and takes up less space. But we have seen about a 50% drop in the cost of lithium-ion batteries in the last couple of years, and I don't think we've really reached the point we may be in 3 or 4 years. I think there will be a point where, with mass production of lithium-ion batteries, mostly for the car market, but also increasingly for battery backup options, that it'll be a better technology to look at than lead-acid batteries. I think a lot of people miss that a big part of the cost of installing battery backup is making sure it's a safe you know, that it's installed to codes, that there's disconnects, that you won't be sending power back to the utility during a power outage, you know, that could compromise the safety of their linemen. So sometimes you see a wholesale price for a battery packet that looks really great, but it may cost two or three times that cost to put in the electrical panels, that secondary inverter, and then have a licensed electrician connect it all in a safe and code compliant way. So those costs probably we can't do a whole lot about. The battery cost, I think there's still going to be some reductions in the next few years.
All right, there we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Burke O'Neill, project engineer at Full Spectrum Solar, our guest today. Lots of questions about solar today, and that's great. If you have other home improvement questions, you're certainly welcome to join in as well. And that number, again, 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Jacob in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. I just yesterday went on a tour with Jeff Epping of the exterior gardens at Epic Systems out in Verona. And most of their parking is under the buildings, so it's really beautiful. You don't see the acres of asphalt that you normally would see. However, when we got there, my friends and I parked in an exterior parking lot, but the entire parking area was covered with architectural kind of blue piping. And I looked up and saw that the roofing was all made out of solar panels. It's quite impressive.
Wow. Burke, are you familiar with that setup? Chad, are you familiar with it?
Sure. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what they've done there. I have seen it. I don't know all the details, but I think that's a great application. It's providing some shade for the employees' vehicles. It was installed in a aesthetically appealing, architectural, intentional manner, and it's helping reduce their electric use. I think the significant energy production they're doing out there is with wind turbines, but it's great to see it coupled with photovoltaic modules. Yeah.
And you've seen it as well, Chad?
I've actually seen that entire campus from the air a couple of times because I've been doing a lot of traveling. And when you fly over Epic, it's just a sight to behold. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. Thanks, Jacob, for calling. Appreciate it. Charles in Adams County up next. Hi, Charles.
How are you doing, Larry?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I'm a 37-year hydroelectric generator. I've generated electric for 37 years on the grid, green energy, and I've done about 250,000 kilowatt hours a year. My question is what would it take in photovoltaics to equal that today? In other words, what would they cost and how much space would they take up, and, you know, what have they got out there that could equal that output over a yearly basis in Wisconsin? You know, with the sun that we have and everything like that, how many solar panels would you need, and how much would you have to set up to make that equal to that?
Yeah.
Well, that's you said you're producing about 37,000 kilowatt hours.
250,000 kilowatt hours a year.
250,000.
I've done that for 37 years.
Oh, that is an impressive amount. For sure, that's going to take you a minute to figure that out, isn't it,
Bert? Yeah, I'm going to have to grab a piece of paper here and run a couple numbers. But you're probably looking at about, this would be a really large system.
Tell you what.
It'd be about a 200-kilowatt photovoltaic system to cover 100% of that. You're probably looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 370 watt photovoltaic modules. So each of those would be about 3 feet by 6 feet. And the cost to install that right now,
is...
Yeah, a lot.
It's a lot.
It's going to be a lot more than probably than that hydroelectric if you've got a good site there.
Yeah. I'm amazed at the amount that Charles is producing on that. It seems like a lot of energy there. So there you go. It's probably not going to pay for you, Charles, to switch.
Yeah, probably a few $100,000 before any incentives.
There we go. Thanks for calling. Lawrence and Nina, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Yeah, I had a comment on battery backup. I built a small system on my own. I took one solar panel, and I have it charge a deep cycle. It's a 76 amp hour battery, and I use that. It powers an inverter, and I use that to power a home office, and it works really well. And if we ever lose power, I can still charge the phones and laptop and, you know, run the wireless router and stuff like that. So for me, that works well as a kind of a, you know, a backup for the essentials. And then we're going to have a separate solar system put on our roof that will should generate about 100% of what we use. But I still have the off-grid option with a battery. So just something to think about as a potential option.
Yeah, that could be done as well, I would think, Chad.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to mention is that I just happened to be out in Boston for the National Remodeling Association's fall conference and went to a Tesla dealer out there and was looking at the power walls that Tesla sells. And we don't see a lot of Tesla in the Wisconsin market, but a power wall system, and I think some of the battery systems that Bert can install, you know, when you put in the batteries with the solar system, all of that qualifies for the federal tax credit. So while the utility systems are really designed for the inverter and the, you know, back and forth of power between the power company and whatever you're producing, you know, that's one incentive system that Focus and others have.
Yeah.
The federal tax credit is just helping you use and harvest solar energy. So that will apply to the battery system. So Tesla likes to point that out and try to get you to buy these power walls, which allow you to use that lithium ion battery technology, have them mounted on the walls, and, you know, store your power that you're generating from your solar panels. And then when the sun goes down or when the power goes out, you can use up those batteries. And then, of course, hopefully the power is still on once your batteries are tapped.
Yeah, and if, you know, if you're in a situation like you might find yourself in Miami these days.
Yes.
That, if, assuming your power wall is still standing.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
In the basement.
Yeah.
Underwater.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I don't even know why I brought that up, but that's not something we hope we never have happen anywhere, again, let alone in Wisconsin.
If I could share another interesting fact, Larry, every day the sun shining on the earth generates enough energy. If we were to capture all of it, we could produce all of the electricity that we consume in a year in one day's amount of sunlight. And of course, the trick is having the panels everywhere to be able to capture that. But there really is, you know, a lot of times in Wisconsin, people say, well, you know, Wisconsin isn't the desert. We really aren't a good candidate for solar. That, in fact, is a false assumption. Germany has the highest production of solar PV energy of any place in the world. And Wisconsin actually gets just a little bit more sunlight than Germany does. So it is simply a false notion that we cannot become quite energy independent. And solar is a big part of that.
Talking with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Burke O'Neill, project engineer at Full Spectrum Solar. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement, we've zeroed in a bit on solar power, but we can also take other home improvement questions as well. Larry Mueller here with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Burke O'Neill, project engineer at Full Spectrum solar, call in 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And this whole business about wintertime in Wisconsin, you started to talk about that, Chad, and just off air here in the last couple seconds, Burke, you were saying, talking about the difference in the sunlight between the South, let's say, and Wisconsin. Repeat some of those figures for me.
Sure. So Wisconsin gets about 80% of the sunlight that you'd see in the desert Southwest, which is a lot higher percentage than most people would think. And a lot of times people associate solar energy with solar heating, but the photovoltaic modules that we're installing are actually more efficient when they're cooler. And that somewhat closes the gap because our panels here, when we have a cool day like today with a little bit of a breeze and it's sunny, they're producing power a lot more efficiently than if they're in the desert at 100 degrees. So it really is a pretty good site for solar energy in Wisconsin.
Interesting to know. George in Ashland, it's your turn. George, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. The question I wanted to ask had to do with storm damage risks to photovoltaic panels.
Yeah.
Particularly, like to know how vulnerable they are to hail, hailstorm, and high winds. And then I'd like to know about insurance coverage, whether the panels are on the house or off the house. Up here in the far north, we get really heavy snow, so we're inclined not to put the panels on the roof because it'd be hard to clear the snow.
Yeah.
But okay. What about the hailstorm?
Sure. The solar modules are typically rated for about a 60-mile-per-hour impact of 1-inch hail. So it would have to be such a high impact that it would also be cracking automobile windshield glass. In fact, the panel's glass is a low-iron tempered glass similar to auto glass. And I've looked at a lot of roofs that have gotten hit with hail, and I have yet to see a single photovoltaic module shatter from that, even though the roofing all around it, the asphalt shingle all around it, significantly damaged. And we've got over 500 installations in the state, so I feel very confident saying it would be very unusual for a panel to be damaged by hail. The racking systems that we use are all rated for 110-mile-per-hour winds. So again, you'd be looking at a pretty catastrophic event with lots of damage from trees and, you know, maybe even your neighbor's roof blowing off completely before the panels are going to get taken off the roof or the racking's going to be significantly damaged. The main insurance claim that we see related to solar energy systems is the roof that doesn't have solar panels on it getting damaged from hail, and the roofer requiring us to remove and reinstall the panels. And so far, there hasn't been any issue with insurance companies covering that cost.
Has it made a difference? Does it make a difference in your overall insurance rates if you have that?
For most people, their insurance includes a provision for ancillary structures like sheds and things that are attached to the house. And that would cover the photovoltaic array. You might want to find out how much that is, what that coverage amount is by calling your agent. I know at my house I didn't have to change anything. I've probably talked to a dozen customers about this, and maybe one or two of them bumped up their overall coverage a little bit just to make sure. But I haven't heard of there being any significant insurance costs for adding solar to your house.
All right. Yeah, thanks, George, for calling. On to, let's see, Bentall in Elkhorn. Your turn. Hi.
Hi, this is Benta here in Elkhorn. I have a question about my animals on my farm. I've asked several plumbers through the years, what if the electricity is gone for a long time and our well won't be able to get the water up? Is it possible to put on a solar panel and some battery just connected to the well itself, so at least I can feel that the animals will get water and our toilets can flush?
Yeah, All right.
Sure. My company doesn't specialize in off-grid applications like that, but there are some other contractors that can do systems that are designed just to charge batteries and run specific loads. It may be possible to even run the well directly off the solar panels when you have sunlight out, and then use battery backup for when you don't have sun. But I would recommend looking at a company that specializes in off-grid systems. There may be some in northern Wisconsin.
I bet there are.
Yeah. Yeah. Here most people are grid connected and don't have a lot of issues with outages. But an online company that comes to mind is Backwoods Solar, and that's their main focus. And they'll even have like packages, you know, with batteries, modules that have been tested. Your plumber and electrician might be more comfortable working with a package where it's already been pre-engineered.
Yeah, that makes sense. Backwoods Solar, did you say?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, that's exactly what I wanted.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Kurt in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Kurt.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Two-part question. One, what's preferable, a north-south gable roof or an east-west? And the other question is there a website or a one-stop phone number over here in the Chippewa Valley, Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls area, to find licensed certified installers?
Mm-hmm. Panels that are facing south will produce about 20% more energy than panels that are facing east or west. So all things being equal, you'd probably want to have a roof area that's facing south. The exception to that might be is if you're looking to cover a large electric load and you're trying to cover as much as possible by facing panels both east and west and using, you know, that high, you've got twice as much roof area, you might be able to cover a larger percentage of your electric use. But I'd say for most residential applications, your best bet would be to have as much roof area facing south. Locating contractors, Focus on Energy maintains a list, so you can check out their website. A lot of solar energy contractors are members of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, so I think that's a really good resource. I know in our area, even just doing a quick search for solar energy, you can find lots of companies in the area that have Google reviews. I always recommend checking references and finding a company that's got a lot of experience with and satisfied customers.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks a lot, Kurt. Judy in Elk Mound, on to you now. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I was wondering if you could tell me if there are some pending tariffs scheduled to hit the president's desk in November, specifically regarding the Tier 1 panels, the Bloomberg Tier 1 panels. And then my other question is, do power companies limit the amount of energy that you can produce?
All right.
Sure. I'm not super up to speed on what they might do as far as tariffs go. There is some concern in the industry. Most of the modules that are being installed in the United States are from China. My company mostly installs North American product, but for very large utility scale, where cost is really important, it's hard to beat the Asian imports. So I think it's going to, if there is a tariff that's put in place, I think it is going to affect the market significantly. I'm hoping they don't set a price floor, but it's just a tariff on product that's imported. But whether they're actually going to do it or not, I think it's kind of anyone's guess. I think we just have to kind of wait and see. A lot of contractors like myself, we're inventorying more product to help, if there is a jump in price, make a smoother transition.
Yeah. Thank you, Jude. Oh, and you had another question, too.
Yeah, I think she had a question about power companies. Yes,
how much they will accept, or is there a ceiling on that?
Sure, it varies a lot depending on the particular utility, But most of the publicly traded utilities and a lot of the municipals and co-ops will allow you to net meter. Usually there's some limitations where if you produce more than 100% of what you're using, they'll put you into a different rate class or they'll pay you much less, which is the reason we generally size systems to cover 85 or 90%. There was some effort in the past for a utility to have a special fee on people who put solar energy systems in, and thankfully the courts threw that out. So if most residential systems can go in Wisconsin without any significant obstacles from the utility.
All right. Ted emailed to ask about the status of those Tesla walls. Is it possible, Chad Spade, to get those here in Wisconsin?
Well, I don't yet know the answer to that question. We were talking about that off the air, and I'm sure between the three of us, we will look into that and be able to tell you next time. But, they're out there. I haven't seen them in Wisconsin, but they are being mass produced, and a single Powerwall retails for $5,500 and costs around $1,000 to install. So
there we go. And we can talk some more about that and take your questions on home improvement and solar with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Burke O'Neill of Full Spectrum Solar. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at solar power today and other home improvement kinds of issues with Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build, and Burke O'Neill, project engineer at Full Spectrum Solar. We'll talk about your solar options, what it takes to retrofit a home, and other home improvement questions as well. Join in at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. Let's go back to the phones and to Mike in Park Falls. Mike, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Hey, thank you so much for the show. I have a second home that we built up in Port Wayne, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That's completely off the grid. And part of the reason was it would have cost so much to run electricity up there because we're kind of in the middle of no place up there. But we have 140-ton sand mass underneath the building that we use for heat storage because we also have the hot water panels on the roof. But we make 4 to 7 kilowatt hours of electricity a day on a good day. And so I just want to thank you for doing this show and to let people know that solar is absolutely viable in northern Wisconsin. It works great for us. You'd never know that this home is off the grid if you didn't see the panels on the roof.
Yeah.
So I did have a quick question that your guest may or may not have an answer to, but it's about small wind turbines for just kind of supplementing my solar panels.
Oh. Small wind turbines. Is that something you've gotten involved in, Burke or Chad? Burke?
Well, because our market is primarily grid-connected customers, we're no longer installing wind turbines. We did a few in 2002, 2003, when the solar modules were a lot more expensive. But for grid-connected homeowners, the cost and the zoning hassles of putting a wind turbine in make it less appealing than installing the solid-state photovoltaic system. And with a grid-connected system, that surplus electricity you produce on a sunny day, you can bank those credits and use them in the evening or on cloudy days. Off-grid might be a little bit different because you're storing your energy with batteries, and if you run out of capacity, you're using a generator, which you might want to avoid. And possibly with an off-grid system, mixing photovoltaics with wind turbine would minimize the amount of times you had to use that generator because it's often windy if it's overcast or in the evening. So I think it'd be worth looking into. Our company doesn't do those installations, but a company that comes to mind, Lake Michigan Wind and Sun, I'm sure there's others in northern Wisconsin that could talk to you about supplementing your system with a wind turbine.
There may be even some material on the Midwest Renewable Energy Association website, or MREA. I think, Chad, that's a possibility.
It's quite possible. And, Larry, there are some, you know, great new designs in wind turbines. I mean, most people think of the, you know, three-bladed, you know, wind turbines that we see out in the fields now, particularly in Iowa and some other states where they're very common, large wind farms. But there are a growing number of kind of helical wind turbines that are more appropriate for a residential area, potentially.
I've even seen them in Fitchburg, just south of Madison, as well. In one of their parks, they've got a setup for with one, and it's actually kind of attractive. Doesn't look bad at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there we go.
Well, I just want to say again, thanks for the show. And anybody who's building new, this house was built new, was built as a solar house. So anybody that's building new, you know, now is a perfect time to incorporate solar into that project. So
yeah. Thank you so much for calling, Mike. Appreciate your call. And let's move on to Pete in Reedsburg. Well, Pete, what's on your mind?
Basement windows, Larry. I have a wood frame house constructed in 1942. The basement is concrete. It's concrete block, not poured.
Yep.
The windows are original to the house, and they're terrible. They're leaky. They're single pane. They got to go. Now, possibly because I can buy a standard dimension off the. Well, let's put it this way: the windows are two blocks long and three blocks high, which I'm led to believe is a standard dimension. And possibly because of that, I can get a good deal on an off-the-shelf window at one of the big box stores. Vinyl, double pane insulated. But here's the sticking point. The window will fit. It's a remodel window, not new construction. It will fit, providing I remove not just the existing window, but the wood frame, which I believe in the building trade is called a buck, B-U-C-K.
Correct.
Right. So if I remove all the wood and just get down to the mortar, these windows will fit very comfortably with just, you know, a quarter to a half inch around them. But I've been told that that's a no-no, that thou shalt not install vinyl windows against concrete. And I can't for the life of me figure out why that would be a problem, because vinyl is a man-made inert substance. It's waterproof. What would be the issue there? So my question is, can I do that or should I not do that?
So it's a great question. So part of the challenge, because you have a cinder block foundation, the buck frame that is in there is serving a few functions. The one function, it's giving you a material that you can attach your window jamb to. You could attach to the block directly, but that block may have a hollow, core in it, so that's going to be exposed once you take out that frame. So you're going to have to deal with that. And there's also a structural component to the buck frame, because whatever is above your windows, there needs to be a header of some sort, or there needs to be something structural that's going to be holding up the floor joists that are above that opening. And sometimes that buck frame is not actually structurally adequate for the load that's being put on it. That's a separate issue that you'd want to think about. But it is probably serving some sort of a load-bearing role in the construction of that wall. So those are some of the issues. There's not a problem with fiberglass I recommend fiberglass over vinyl, but there's not a problem with vinyl or fiberglass being in contact with the earth or with the cement or block foundation. But those other issues are things that you have to think about. And obviously you want it to be properly air sealed and water sealed. If it's below grade, you've got other issues that you need to be concerned about. But that and the wood buck frame, you know, has some disadvantages when we talk about some of those other issues. But those are all the sorts of things you want to be thinking about. And certainly any vinyl or fiberglass window can be made to fit within the buck frame.
Right. Yeah, right.
And not at a prohibitively expensive cost.
Okay. There is a half-inch space between the top part of the buck at the top of the window and the sill. I believe it's called the sill plate. Mm-hmm. And I inferred from that it must not be performing a structural mission, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, maybe it's supposed to be, and it's not. That's another reason.
Right.
It's another thing to think about, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Pete. Ray in Rhinelander, you're up. Hi, Ray.
Hi, what a beautiful day here up in the Northland. I'm painting my off-grid school bus on my property. What I want to know is there a small company or a company in Wisconsin that deals with off-grid, smaller solar type of applications for cabins, school buses, tiny houses? Have you run across anything like that? I can order stuff, you know, from Europe and other places in California, but I like to support my local economy.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Burke for that. Burke O'Neill?
I'd recommend contacting the Midwest Renewable Energy Association for that. The only company that comes to mind that I know does off-grid installations is Photovoltaic Systems. I believe they're up in Amherst, Wisconsin. So they might be able to help you out. Most of the contractors are not doing smaller off-grid systems or selling kits because there's such a strong presence online, it's hard to compete with the higher overhead a full contractor would have.
Mm-hmm. In Amherst, it's located in Amherst, which is where the MREA is located, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it'd definitely be worth giving them a call and the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. There are some good online companies that have been providing products and been in the industry for a long time. I mentioned backwoodsolar.com earlier, and another one that comes to mind is altenergy.com. So if you can't find something locally, maybe one of those sites could help.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Rod in Weyerhaeuser, your turn now. Hi, Rod.
Yes, thank you, Larry, for the program. Very good program. Yeah, I just had a question on the panels. When are they going to come out with pretty reasonably affordable shingle panels where you can eliminate that you're killing two birds with one stone? You got your new roof and they're doing solar panel work, and then you eliminate also the possibility of panels mounted being blown off in storms.
Okay.
It's a much bigger technical challenge than I think most people would realize. A number of big companies, Unisolar, CertainTeed, Dow Chemical, have all tried to make a solar shingle and have discontinued the products from the market. Getting something that's waterproof, that you can have electrical connections underneath, that serves both the function of providing a good roofing material and produces electricity efficiently, is difficult. A lot of press right now has been on the Tesla solar shingle, but there really aren't a whole lot of details out about that. There's a lot of press releases and a lot of excitement about it, but there's not really a lot of technical details, so it's hard for me to speak how reasonable a product that would be for most people. I'm guessing because right now they're installing mainly test sites and for their own employees, that it may be a few years until we see that product in the Midwest. There's certainly a lot of advantages to putting modules over a conventional roof. Historically, it's actually been less expensive to put an asphalt shingle roof on and then modules than one of these products that combine both of them. If you ever need to re-roof, your panels can still be used because their lifespan's longer than a typical roof. And I mentioned earlier in the program that one thing we have going here is cooler weather allows panels to run more efficiently, and having that few inches of airspace underneath the modules allows those cells to operate cooler and more efficiently.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Rod, I want to give Brian in Appleton a chance to join in, so let's go there next. Brian, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi there. I just had a comment for the gentleman that was asking about the vinyl window in the cement opening. You need that expansion and contraction space. That's why you can't put it in tight like that.
Yeah,
that's an excellent point, Brian. Yes, for any vinyl window or any vinyl product when it's installed, it has to be able to expand and contract. And certainly there's zero tolerance for expansion if you're snug in a masonry opening. It would buckle and fail and crack or whatever. But vinyl is just, there are a lot of limitations to vinyl. But it's very inexpensive to purchase, and so it's attractive to consumers for that reason.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Brian.
I had one other question. I belong to a nonprofit, 501(c), and we're looking to change out a bunch of lamps we got to LEDs. What's the best program for that?
You mean to... to get rid of the lamps or to...
because they're just the regular incandescent, and we got a lot of them, and we want to switch them out with LED bulbs.
Is this in a residential building or is it office? Commercial?
No, it's a nonprofit museum.
Oh, right. So I would recommend that you contact Focus on Energy, because they have different programs for different types of commercial applications, and they have consultants that will work with you. There are rebates for particular types of bulbs that you might install, and they're happy to work with anyone in the state. I would go to their website and they'll be able to connect you to the right people, even if they're not able to actually those people.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Kathy emailed to say, and I don't think we covered this. We may have talked about it off air, but her college-age son says solar can be bad for the environment, the components in making them, and future pollution when disposing of them. Is this, how would you comment on that, Burke?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is the predominant component in the solar cells in the module is silicon, which is, I think, one of the most common substances on the crust, and it's, you know, basically like sand. There are small amounts of some other compounds that need to be handled properly, and as more photovoltaic modules are installed and there's a need for them to be recycled as they wear out, my understanding is the manufacturers are committed to doing that in an environmentally sound way. It's just like any product that's out there. There needs to be some thought about how it's recycled at the end. From my reading, the biggest environmental impact of a photovoltaic module is the energy that actually goes into manufacturing that. And there's been a lot of improvement. In fact, the most recent stuff that I've read is that it's just a couple years of energy production to cover the energy that went into the module being manufactured. And modules today have a 25-year power output warranty, so we're expecting these to keep producing for a very, very long time. Interestingly, we've had some panels that got broken in shipping, and if the manufacturer didn't want them sent back, we found markets for the cells. They can be used in projects or put back into new panels for experimental purposes. So to date, I haven't ever had to throw a used module out. There's always been a market for it for some other application.
Terry in Roberts emailed to ask if solar panels work on steel roofing.
Yeah, actually, it's a really good fit in most cases. If there's any kind of rib on the steel roofing, we can usually find a clamp that's designed to hold the rail that the panel's fastened to that'll go right onto that rib, and that means there doesn't have to be any penetrations in the roofing. Another common product is has sort of a trapezoidal profile, and we have special clamps that are bolted onto that that profile. The one challenging steel roof would be a shingle-type product. With those, we really need to work closely with the manufacturer and the roofer to make sure that our supports are flashed properly.
Yeah. Susan in Oshkosh emailed that she is sold on this, and she always wanted to do it anyway, but now it seems to be feasible. How can she find a reliable installer in her area? And she's in Oshkosh, but we kind of talked about this, but it bears repeating, I think.
Yeah, I think Focus on Energy remains to be a great resource because they are heavily vested in the success of these programs, and they want to have qualified installers that are going to help you get maximum payback.
And I think, don't they also, and if, certainly you can talk to somebody like Burke and can figure out the whether or not something like solar makes sense, but even the energy folks have that kind of information, I believe, on their site.
A lot of companies now will pull up your house on Google Earth, and they can tell you what your solar potential is just from the satellite imaging that we have. So,
Absolutely amazing. Well, so how busy are you? Are you a busy guy right now, Chad?
Absolutely. We're for about a year now, we've been just trying to keep ahead of things, and we've got about a year's worth of work.
I had already.
Yeah.
And you're in your 25th year?
That's correct. Yes, we're celebrating 25 years.
That's pretty cool. Now, you haven't been celebrating 25 years yet, Burke O'Neill, but you've been in business a long time when it comes to solar.
Yeah, I started doing full-time solar energy work in 1998 and was just dabbling before that. And Mark and I started Full Spectrum Solar in 2002. It's just been amazing, the growth that we've seen. Even compared to last year, we're doing almost twice the sales, and last year was a pretty good year. So we weren't really sure what would happen with the changes in the administration, but so far work is very solid. We're contracted out about 2 months right now.
And in terms of, I was just going to follow up on that, we've zeroed in mostly on homes. Are you doing much work with businesses, commercial types of enterprises?
Yes. We do fewer commercial and business installations, but they're generally much larger. We're doing anything from 20 to 200 kilowatt installs for commercial entities. And the big advantage, in addition to economies of scale, is they're eligible for Focus incentives, the 30% tax credit, and also accelerated depreciation. So they can depreciate the cost in the first 5 years, and the return on investment can be excellent.
With that, we are out of time. Thank you guys so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it, and we'll look forward to another visit.
Thank you.
Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Burke O'Neill from Full Spectrum Solar. I believe we have links to them on our Facebook page as well. Great talking with them, and lots of really good questions. Thanks to everybody who called in, and just thanks for listening. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.